Welcome to everyone listening all around the world, all across the United States. We're coming to you live from the UFO UAP headquarters, which tonight is the Coast to Coast AM studios right here in Los Angeles, California, standing in on this Saturday evening. I'm yours, Jimmy Church, and tonight my guest is Grant Cameron. Well, it's been about 2 weeks since I last hosted here on Coast. And right after my last show here, I jumped in my Jeep and I drove around the West Coast for 6 days. That's right. And after that, I took the last week off as well. Until tonight, I'm back. It's all good, but driving for 6 days, visiting one small town after another without checking my cell phone every 5 minutes, it revealed a lot. And yes, I cleared my head. What I found out there was very interesting. And out front, right out front, is that there are a lot of UFO and Bigfoot stories on the West Coast. Let me tell you something. Most everyone that I met and struck up a conversation with had a story or two to share. Most didn't know who I was or what I was doing. They didn't know anything. And that part was great because nobody asked me for my opinion or thoughts. So that was pretty relaxing. Anyway, away from the madness that is Los Angeles, or most big cities right now, I saw that life is pretty much normal out there. It was refreshing. People just doing their thing, right? Well, they're doing their thing, but wearing face masks, by the way, while they're doing it. But there was no protest out there, no small town drama. Everything just seemed, well, I don't know how else to put it. It just seemed normal. And then I came back to L.A., started to check the news and social media, and quite frankly, I didn't like what I saw. My clear head was quickly being sucked back into the reasons why I left. So I spent a few days deleting, blocking, muting anything and anyone that raised my blood pressure. I did. And let me say this before I go further. My feeds now on social media are cleaned out. Cleaned out. That's it. Anybody, any drama, anything political, this, right? It's gone. And I can scroll through the feed and feel normal, like I did driving around the West Coast of the United States. And the thing that's out there right now in social media is just drama put out there to divide and conquer. And I don't dig it. I see through it. I see through it all now. I thought I did before, but I did not. I didn't. You got to get out, clear your head, come back, refocus, and then you really see what's going on. Now, on my last show on Coast, I mentioned back on July 4th, that the media is doing their very best to separate us. We know that. It doesn't matter which outlet you go to. It's all there. It's just trying to divide the country. And right now, it seems to be working. But in the end, we'll start to see through it. We'll see through what the agenda is. And we're going to get back to what made this country great. That we are all different. And together, we are amazing. And I really believe that. I really, really believe that. And I also mentioned 2 weeks ago on this very program that the media is covering and promoting the UFO subject like never before. And today, you will always find a breaking ET story buried in these crazy headlines that we find ourselves in. And thankfully, that part of my life didn't change while I was away. I'm not making light of it. I needed some sense of normalcy, right? Well, the UFO community is no stranger to drama. The twists and turns over the last 3 years have gone way and above anything we have experienced in the past. And 4 days ago, it was announced that the executive director of MUFON was arrested back on July 3rd. 3 days ago, he was fired and replaced. Now, although this came as a complete shock to most of the community, myself included, it just reminds me once again, when will this crazy drama end? 2020, this first 7 months, has been remarkable. When I look back over the last 40 years that I have been researching the UFO subject, it seems that it's been one huge scandal after another that many thought would bring the end to ufology. All of it was stuff that made us stronger. It made us wiser. One of the researchers that has been through it all is Grant Cameron. Now, 3 weeks ago, before I left on my road trip, I had Grant on my show, Fade to Black, and both of us had no idea what was about to happen to our community over the last 3 weeks. And besides the recent MUFON crisis, there are rumors circulating now about the New York Times is about to release a couple of articles. One is reportedly about UFO crash retrievals, and the other, the Wilson document. Now, although Grant will be with us right after the break, I'll say this. It was Grant that first approached me about the Wilson document before it was released, and at that time, he knew what he had in his possession could potentially change everything. Now, it seems that the New York Times is about to blow everything out in the open, and you can thank Grant for all of this. So yeah, 2020, yeah, it's going to continue to be the year to remember. I can promise you that. For now, turn down the lights and get ready. This is another Saturday night event here on Coast to Coast AM. You can follow me right now on Twitter at J Church Radio. Just click on my name right there on the Coast to Coast AM website. It'll take you straight to my Twitter page. Twitter is always live to my left right here in the studio. Been hanging out for the last couple of hours with all of you. Any questions or comments, post them, and maybe your tweet will get live read on the air. And of course, as always, enjoy the bumper music tonight. The theme, well, it's just music from my playlist. And later, it is Saturday night, and we are going to open up the phones, both with Grant and open lines with all of you, because it's another Saturday night here on Coast, and I want you to join in on the conversation. Let's do this, man. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. And I'll be right back with my guest, Grant Cameron. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Saturday night, heading into Sunday morning. Our guest tonight is Grant Cameron. And you can kick things off right there on Twitter. You can follow Grant at Grant Cameron. And he's a big Twitter guy. And you can also follow me on Twitter at JChurch Radio. And we will be checking things. I've got some great questions already that have come in on Twitter. So you can post right there at J Church Radio. Grant Cameron is a Canadian researcher who has researched a major UFO flap in 1975 and 1976, as well as the early Canadian government investigation into flying saucers, including the MJ-12 document and its connection to the former president of Penn State University. Grant's works now leads him to research stories about UFOs surrounding the president of the United States and the White House. He's got so much more to offer. Former Researcher of the Year by two different organizations a couple of years ago. I would like to welcome back to Coast AM, Grant Cameron. Grant, good evening, young man. How you doing?
Just fantastic. Thank you, Jimmy. That was a wonderful opening. I'll put you in my will.
Yeah, right on. Thank you. You know, this is the thing, Grant, is you are looked to by so many in the UFO community, not only for a fair and balanced and objective take on your research, but somebody that really gets into it. You don't telephone it in, you do it. But starting there, you've been doing this for 40 years. Has the last 3 years been just about the most out-of-control UFO dealings that you have ever experienced? It's just been a crazy ride, hasn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, people don't realize. I often, when I lecture, I tell people, because you get a lot of sort of people who are new to the field or young or whatever, and I keep telling them, you think that what happens today happened in the past. It's absolutely not true. That's the one thing that they have to realize. It's a completely different world than 1975. In 75, it was like UFOs were random events. You would only see one in your lifetime, and even then you were crazy. There was no crop circles. There was no cattle mutilations. There was, I mean, the cattle mutilations just started. Now we have these people running around with this light language thing and automatic writing and the stories. I guess it started mostly with Bill Moore in 1980 when he put out the Roswell book. And that's when it sort of started to unravel that there was actually appeared to be some evidence that this was for real. Because before 1980, most people don't realize, there was no discussion about crashed saucers. There was, in the 1950s, the story with, that had been put out about the crash at Aztec, New Mexico, but it had been discounted as being a bunch of garbage, and the Roswell story never even made it. I mean, it was like a one-day story and then disappeared. So it was only in 1980 when people started. I remember being at the first lecture that was ever given on alien autopsies, and that was Len Stringfield, and that was in Dayton, Ohio, and he got the death threats, and they had to move him to a different hotel. It was very dramatic because nobody had ever talked about this before. And then Bill Moore comes along the year after and puts out the Roswell book. But in the last couple of years, I guess Tom DeLonge has a lot to do with this, because that sort of really opened it up. It was almost like the Bill Moore thing of the 1980s. I was with Bill Moore and the excitement around him in terms of all these people that were talking to him. And so when the Tom DeLonge thing started, I came out with a book 6 months before, or 8 months before he actually went public with Announcing to the Stars. And I was hearing all this background stuff from Chris Bledsoe, who was sort of involved there. And I knew what was going on, and I figured out who Jim Semivan was. And so I was pretty excited, and a lot of people thought this was all sort of a scam. But basically what happened is when they came out, then some people started to take it serious. And when the New York Times dropped the article, it was a completely different world. I mean, everything changed at that moment, and every thought, you know, I remember we used to think, oh, the world's going to come to an end, people are going to jump off bridges, the stock market's going to melt down, and I guess the government had done enough of a job of acclimatization that everybody went, yeah, I knew that already, no problem.
Yeah, it kind of felt that way to me, too, and even my own family, who doesn't discuss UFOs with me ever.
Yeah,
of course we're not alone in the universe. You know, after the New York Times story, yeah. And the way that they approached it was pretty surprising to me, but it was a good barometer for the rest of the world. If my family was dealing with it that way, well, pretty much everybody else was too. Let's back up to last year. You approached me. We don't need to get into specifics here, but you came up to me. Yeah. And said, I'm sitting on something, and you started to discuss it with me. But if you don't mind, Grant, I'm just going to say my recollection.
Yeah.
Your hands were shaking, right? You were pretty nervous. You knew, and I'm talking about the Wilson documents,
yeah.
And you knew what you were sitting on. Here we are today, with so much time has elapsed, and the release has, you know, it's gone public, and we've done a lot of shows on it. Did you think the reaction that we're going through today was what you were so worried about when you first talked to me about it?
Yeah, I didn't think it would get the traction that it has gotten, but I knew it was. I knew it was a huge story. In fact, we met at the in LA at the Consciousness Life Expo, and you remember I had Michael Hall, the disclosure
attorney,
paranormal lawyer,
right?
And that's what I had done when I got the document. See, what happened when I got the document in November, I saw this name Oak Shannon on there, and I had dealt with Eric Davis back at the turn of the century, and he had given me Oak Shannon's notes from the famous John Alexander group in the 1980s. And so I knew the connection between those two. So when I saw that, I knew it was important. But when I was shown it by James Rigney in the hotel lobby, he had it on a sort of a little iPad thing. I only saw a couple of pages. So I thought the document was only 2 pages long. And I said, yeah, I'll put it in this book. I'm releasing Managing Magic, the second book. And I said, I'll just put it at the end of the book. I won't make any comment about it. And then when he sent me the document in December, I suddenly realized it was 15 pages long. And then he sent me the alien autopsy document, which was even more like a wild document. And I saw Kit Green's name, and I had chased Kit Green around for 40 years. And I knew who all these people were, and I started to panic because the thing was, people don't understand that, you know, if the people aren't associated with you, you can drop the document. But if you've dealt with these guys and interacted with these guys, it was sort of like, oh my God, like how do I do this? I mean, how do I, you know, drop this document? So when I came to you, that's the first thing I did when I saw the document in December, the full document, is I figured, oh my God, I got to do something. And I went to get a lawyer, and I said, you know, I got this problem, and I suddenly panicked. Like, you know, I didn't realize the document was this big and that there was these two documents. And so when I met you in February, I was pretty shaken because I didn't really know if I could pull it off. I didn't know if I was going to do it anymore. And I was having these conversations with Michael, and I said, you know, I need you. Maybe they'll sue me. And he said, well, yeah, they could do that. I mean, they could do that to back you off. And I go, what do you mean they're going to get you? And I'm looking at all the possibilities of all the things that could go wrong. And these are very powerful guys that are in the document. And then the other thing that sort of disturbed me at the point, and I don't know if you know this story, what James Rigney had phoned me just before I met you in L.A., and he had said to me, he says, did you show the document to Dolan? I went, no, I didn't show it to Dolan. He said, he's on Jimmy Church's show talking about it. And that was in December of 2018. And I say that's one of the most important parts of the story, was that you asked Richard Dolan about 7 months before the document went public, before Richard finally ran with the thing when he got it. And you asked him, have you ever seen a document that you wanted to get a hold of and you weren't allowed to
That's right.
notes or anything like that? And he starts describing the Wilson document. So this is long before it ever went public. And that's when Rigney phoned me up and he said, did you give it to him? And I go, no. And he said, we saw Jimmy Church is talking about it. And I said, no, he's not. And he said, yeah, he's talking about the document. And that's what really upset me. Then I'm figuring, like, what is going on here? Maybe I did give it to Dolan. I'm trying to think, well, what's going on? And there was this confusion of how I was going to do this. And then basically this guy ran into me. He was sort of a high-level guy. A bunch of people in the UFO world were trying to hire this guy. And he had a friend in the Pentagon. And that's when he said to me, I said at that point, I don't think I can drop this thing, but I'm a disclosure guy. So people were asking me for the document. And I said, no, you can't have it. And then I said, no, anybody wants to see the document, I'll just describe the document. And they'll say, can I see it? And I say, yeah, hoping that someone would drop it. And that's what happened. This guy said, well, you just put it on Twitter. Just put it on Reddit. And I said, yeah, but I don't want to drop this thing. And he said, well, send me the document. And then he called me back. And he said, okay, leave it with me. And then I got a phone call from him later, and it was his buddy in the Pentagon who had said, just put it on Reddit. That's how you drop it, and you have these secure email accounts and stuff like that. And they were describing how this whole thing, and that's what the way they did it. And so when it went public, you know that it sat on the Internet for a couple months, and a bunch of people saw it, and they made the same decision as me. They had the document, like some of the young gun guys had it, and they didn't go public with the document as well. Because I warned them, I said, if you're talking to these people and then you're going to drop this document on them, get ready. They're not going to talk to you anymore. And so...
Well, let me jump in. We've got 60 seconds before the break. The document, I think the general conclusions is that the document is real. The contents, that'll be debated. Yeah. But the document is real. Did you feel... in 30 seconds, Grant, did you feel that the document was authentic when you first saw it?
Oh, absolutely, because I knew the story behind it. And some of that story hasn't come out. But I was given a pretty clear description of who got it, how it got out of the Mitchell files and stuff like that. So I was pretty sure. Plus, I was given a document that we've never released, and that was a letter of condolence that Edgar Mitchell had sent to a very famous person. And James said he didn't want it. It was too personal not to release it. So I actually had four documents.
When we come back after the break, we'll discuss what the New York Times has been right in front of the UFO subject now for almost 3 years now. And we're going to discuss the rumors about these two articles that are about to drop. We'll do all of that. There's a lot more to talk about. Of course, the recent shakeup over at MUFON. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm yours, Jimmy Church. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Follow Grant Cameron at Grant Cameron on Twitter. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I'm yours, Jimmy Church. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. You can follow Grant Cameron at Grant Cameron right there on Twitter as well. Now, Grant, right before the break, we're talking about the New York Times, and you got to love the, you know, rumors in the UFO community and stuff. But where there's smoke, there's fire. And this chatter's been going around about these two articles that are about to drop with the New York Times. And one of them, obviously, you have a lot to do with, which is the UFO, the Wilson UFO document. Now, with this, any speculation on what the angle is going to be in this article?
Well, you got to remember that Leslie Kane worked with Stephen Greer back in the day when this all happened in 1997. So, in fact, you know, her book, a lot of those witnesses in her book are disclosure witnesses from Greer. So she was one of the first people to sort of describe the Wilson situation in 97, and she was good friends with Will Miller, and he's in the document. He was the military advisor to Stephen Greer and the guy who was setting up all these meetings. So I would imagine that she tracked all this stuff. They went to track these people back, and some of them have actually talked a little bit. Like Will Miller has done a little bit of interviewing since the thing happened. So it would just be a matter of getting one source, because the Wilson document describes pretty clearly who's involved. They would be able to track who the people are in the positions now, and it would just take one of those people to sort of validate the fact that, yeah, this is for real. So that's where I'm just guessing, because I don't think Blumenthal, he was working on a book on John Mack or whatever. I don't think he would have the background. It would be Leslie Kane who would have the background, and she'd been in the Stephen Greer organization, and she would be able to go back, and maybe they're talking to Stephen. They didn't talk to me. The New York Post talked to me, and you probably know the New York Post is coming out with something on the Wilson leak as well. And when they interviewed me, they didn't seem very interested in anything. It was almost like some of the interviews you get with reporters, you know, because they really don't know what's going on, and they don't know anything about UFOs, and they sort of get stuck with this stupid story. Mm-hmm. That's my impression. And then they did this series, and they did this weird thing. I don't know if you know how this works. Like the New York Post did the old deal like Tom DeLonge does all the time. They put it on Twitter, and then they pulled it off 15 minutes later. Do you know why they do that?
No, I have no idea. You're the veteran.
Yeah, because Tom DeLonge does that all the time. You'll see a lot of the Tom DeLonge stuff. He puts it on Twitter or Facebook for 15 minutes, and then they pull it down. So what happened is Stephen Greenstreet, who was doing the New York Post article, actually put it up. And this guy, I call him the UFO Google. It's Giuliano Marinkovic out of Ireland. This guy's like unbelievable. Nothing escapes this guy. And he managed to get it on a cell phone. So we've got that whole piece. And they interview Eric Davis, and they mention me, and what's the deal on this? And he says it comes from the Mitchell files, and I'm not going to talk about it. And so this is all recovered. And then they said this story that they pulled the Eric Davis. They never put the other part they put up, but the Eric Davis part they didn't put up because there was something wrong in the background on the set or something. But it was the same 14 minutes as everything else. I mean, it was like they didn't change the background set. And then he said July the 1st he was going to drop it. And I actually saw I think it was on Twitter he put it out. He said it'll be out July 1st. And now they've pulled that article back. But that one's on the Wilson as well. And I've also got people may not know, the Australians are working on it as well, because that's where the story started.
Right.
And there's at least one reporter there who talked to me for a great length of time. Now, I'm not sure if there's one or two people working on the story, different agencies, but I think the 60-minute people were working on it at one point, and then it got pulled. They had one story, and it was pulled at the last minute. But anyway, he talked to me, and this guy, after I talked to him, this guy knew everything. And he's the one that basically said, I think the New York Times has got a drop. They're talking to all the same people I'm talking to. And so they went, because everybody can identify who the people are.
Right.
Some of them are going to do the no comment. But he knew an awful lot. Like, I even talked to him at one point. I said, the guy you should talk to is Dick D'Amato, who was involved in this story. And he said, I tried to talk to him. So if he knew who Dick D'Amato was, and he tried to talk to him. And that's the difference, I think, between reporters working these stories and the reporters of yesteryear, is that these guys know what they're talking about. It's because you always hear this story that the UFO field is a real steep learning curve. You can't just come in as a reporter and do a story. You've got to have a lot of background. And this Australian guy I talked to had a lot of background. He knew everything, and he said he was thoroughly convinced this document was for real. And I don't know what he's going to do, but it looks like there's a bunch of major media people who are on this thing. And it's almost like they realize they've been had, and it's like a race to get the Pulitzer Prize now, and who's going to get it first.
Yeah, I agree with that. And with I know we're all speculating until, you know, these articles do drop. But what we do know is that apparently Admiral Wilson went on the record last month and said that he wasn't in Las Vegas and he never sat in the back of a car with Dr. Eric Davis. And then that caused the UFO community to go, well, okay, I guess the document may be real, but the contents are bogus. Do you think that Admiral Wilson will come out on the record a second time for the New York Times and Leslie Kane, if Leslie is the reporter?
Well, I think he's going to still deny it. I think he's denied it five times or six times. I even had a message back from Ron Pandolfi, who I chase around quite often, and he put out the message that he talked to him and he had denied it to him. And so he has no choice but to deny it because he's, you know, basically in a position where they were going to, you know, pull his, you know, his position and take stars away and all this kind of stuff. I don't think he has any choice. That's where I think the leak may come from somewhere else. It's somebody else who's not really a central character has maybe confirmed. And then you hear these stories about Corbell and George Knapp going to Edwards Air Force Base, and he's saying maybe they would want to do some edits as if he's got something as well. This is just a pile of all sorts of stories. And then there's this story about Kit Green. They're leaking this. I was leaked this tape of Kit Green talking to an intuitive that he claims is 95 to 100% accurate, and along with a transcript, and I find somebody else has got the same thing. So you see all these different stories and leaks, and it's almost like somebody said, maybe it was even George that said, the House of Cards is about to collapse. I mean, and I would believe it from what I've seen.
Well,
is about to drop. And everybody says this, every source that I've talked to on the New York Times says crash saucer is part of the story.
Yeah, exactly. And before we get to that, because that's a very interesting twist to all of this, is that for the New York Times to publish a story, they've got their legal department, they vet everything, and to run a story about this document, then it's got to fall back to the key player in this, which is Admiral Wilson. And you would think that they would call Admiral Wilson to vet that part of the story, right? Otherwise, the New York Times wouldn't run with it, would they?
Well, that's what I'm thinking. Unless they've got somebody else, they're not going to do that part. That's what leaked it. But in terms of this overseeing agency of black ops, they may have gotten something on that where they've been able to confirm that there is a black program. And even though Wilson wasn't able to get to it, they may have some confirmation that, and that's where I hear this thing about Edwards Air Force Base, that suddenly everybody's running to Edwards Air Force Base as if people have sort of figured it out as to where the program is and how it's run and stuff like that. And all it would take is one person to sort of confirm that, yes, there is this black unacknowledged special access program that has been hidden, and then they've got it there. I don't think they really need Wilson because I can't see him ever confirming, and he didn't get anything. In the end, he was sort of came up against this brick wall, so he really didn't get anything anyway.
Right, and Edwards Air Force Base is in my backyard, so if you want to come down from Winnipeg, that's just a short drive away. That's literally probably 30 minutes from the studios here.
It's got a lot of weird UFO background to it. Lots of stuff has happened. That was where Eisenhower was supposed to have met the beings there in 54, and that's where Cooper, they had the film where the thing landed on the base there, and it was filmed and sent to the Pentagon. There's a lot of really interesting stories around Edwards.
Everything goes on out there. It's the middle of the Mojave Desert. It's pretty incredible. Now, for the New York Times to, in addition to the Wilson document leak story, to do another story about the government having crash retrievals of UFO craft in their possession, this coming on the heels of everything else over the last 3 years, this is potentially huge, isn't it?
Oh, that's game over. I mean, if they confirm that, I mean, that's basically, as I would say, like the house of cards falls, because then it's not just UFOs, but we actually have beings and we have crafts. And then the question starts to be asked, how much have you got, what kind of program, why did you hide the money, and this whole, it sort of confirms the whole story. It's almost like we've been right all along, and finally someone can confirm it. So it's not just somebody had a UFO sighting and it was confirmed. It's almost like when you go to the thing where Trump talks about, yeah, they told me some interesting stuff about Roswell, but if you actually get a photograph of a craft or a body, or you know where the location of it is, and somebody can confirm the audit, the where the money is going, and the line where it's being hidden and stuff like that, then everybody just jumps on it. And that's what, I guess, what they're probably afraid of, because that's what happened to the New York Times. It was not only New York Times, it was Washington Post and Politico. So we don't know what they're doing, but I know the Politico guy is pretty intense, still working on this. So you could have multiple agencies, and you know what it's like in Washington. Once there's a leak, I mean, it just, everybody descends on it, and it doesn't take long. These reporters are pretty sharp, and everybody's got a bunch of sources inside the Pentagon that confirm this kind of stuff. So they may have just found out where the program is. That would be my guess. I'm not sure, but that there is a program and where it's being hidden and how they hid the money and that kind of stuff.
Yeah, is there, in your opinion, a researcher or classified as an insider or whistleblower out in the public right now, a name that we know, we don't have to mention names, but a name that we know that is in possession of the real knowledge when it comes to UFOs and ETs visiting this planet or crash retrievals or alien bodies? Or is that person with the real knowledge, right, the Snowden-ish person, that they have not come forward yet? If you were to speculate on that, what would you say?
Well, Richard talks about that. Richard had a source. I think I know who it is, but I won't say. But he has a source that he went to, and he said, do you think you could tell me the 12 guys that are running the show? And the guy said, yeah, I could probably do that. But then you'd go to the New York Times, I would deny it, and nobody would ever talk to me again. And that's the problem. So if somebody's got it, they're not coming forward because they're in the same game. They're trying to figure out what it is, and you're going to lose your security clearance or your job. We talked to this Bob McGuire. I don't know if you're familiar with him.
I've interviewed him many times.
Yeah, so he tells a story that he saw a letter from Wilson complaining about the fact that he'd been cut out. And he hasn't gotten his specifics and shown his diary and all this kind of stuff, or who the letter was addressed to and who he talked to, and he was in this skiff or whatever. But he basically says he's absolutely sure that there was a massive counterintelligence review of this situation when the Wilson thing leaked. And he said these guys would have gone through a meat grinder. And that's based on 30 years of working in high-level intelligence, that they would, you know, and that's the problem that they have, is when this thing gets outed, it's not just, you know, a secret. It's like you have to change the program name, like when Jimmy Carter leaked the stealth thing, you got to change the code name, you got to move the project, it just costs huge amounts of money, and you're trying to figure out how much did this jeopardize the program. So even if someone has it, and that's, I believe there are people around that probably even know who have all this knowledge, but they have the security clearance problem, they have the job problem, and they have the fact that, like me, when I leaked the Wilson document, nobody's ever talking to me again. I mean, there's people who, you know, probably got voodoo dolls and sticking pins in them, you know, because I did this. And that's the whole problem, is because it causes so much trouble when this kind of stuff leaks. And so nobody's ever going to share anything with me again, and that's how it works.
Well, and we have you to thank for where we are right now. And I think everybody needs to appreciate not only who you are, but the chances that you took. Like I said, you were scared. You scared me because you were so scared when we talked about this. And I knew that it was important. But if you sit on it, it doesn't do anybody any good.
Exactly.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Do you think that the stuff that is about to drop, and I expect it to, is it because it has to happen because there's something else that is about to happen, right? And they know this, and they're just trying to get out in front of the story?
Yeah, that's always a possibility that they're doing that. That was this thing I mentioned, this audio tape with Kit Green. It's been leaked twice to me and one other person recently. And it's like they're still doing this thing where they're putting this stuff out But in terms, I still think that the Wilson leak provided enough detail that guys inside the New York Times who are, you know, or Washington Post or Politico or these things, they all know all these agencies and how they work, and they have, you know, national security reporters and stuff like that. And there was just enough evidence in there that they knew where to go, because before you really didn't know who was running it. But the Wilson document is pretty specific about how this thing was covered up and which people were involved, not in those days, but now you'd be able to figure out who the people are in those agencies and how this oversight, and even have the Senate coming forward with the Senate Intelligence Committee basically saying, yeah, this thing's for real, and we need to get this thing out, and giving this sort of ultimatum that we want a report made and stuff like that. So it's starting to snowball, and you get that situation where you got to try to control the story, and that's what I always said. I think Semivan had been quoted as saying, "We wanted you dead, you would have been dead 10 years ago. We don't do that kind of stuff anymore." So what they do, and that's why I use the name on Managing Magic. That's what they do. Is you have a story that's not really UFOs; it's all sorts of weird stuff, and you got to manage the story. And so they've done this. They've worked on this intelligence, how to get out in front of a story, and how to sort of minimize it. Meanwhile, I think they're moving everything. I mean, everything. They're trying to rehide the program, change the code names, all this kind of stuff, because they've had a year to get ready. And I believe that's what happened at Area 51. If you listen to Eric Davis, he said they shut the program down in 1989. Well, that's exactly when Bob Lazar came out, and he said at one point the stuff isn't at Area 51, which indicates to me that as soon as the Lazar thing fell, and all the people are up in the mountains looking down on the base, it was time to move the base and move the crafts and change the code names and all that kind of stuff. And that's what you would do in a program, because you got to protect the program.
Do you think that we've got 45 seconds, Grant,
yeah,
that with Marco Rubio, Senator Marco Rubio, and the Intelligence Committee over in the Senate making these requests out of the Navy, this is not going to be out in the public. This will be behind closed doors, won't it?
But still, it leaks out. Still, I think some stuff's going to leak out in terms of, like, he had to make this public statement the other night. He did this news conference thing where he talked about it again. So he's under a lot of pressure. I don't think they can maybe keep the classified stuff. But in terms of confirming it, he's basically confirming himself. He said, we know they have this stuff, and it's above our bases and stuff. So, no, I think a lot of this stuff's going to leak out.
Let me jump in right there. Our guest tonight is Grant Cameron. You can follow Grant on Twitter at Grant Cameron. You can follow me on Twitter at Jay Church Radio. We've got a lot to talk about. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Stay with us.